Welcome to episode 67 of Two Larrys and a Mic. I'm Larry Doughty. Hey, yo.
Oh, excuse me, Larry. You know, it's all this smoke in the air. I just barely found my way to the studio this morning. It's so bad.
How bad is it?
Smokey Bear just took the last train to the coast. Smokey Bear. Excuse me. A little phlegm.
Where is Mike today?
Oh, Mike. Mike, let's see.
Or is he hiding in
no,
the...
No. Mike is getting in shape for the big Punch and Judy show coming up at the local theater. Unfortunately, no one has explained that Punch and Judy are puppets. And
man, he's going to be really shocked.
It's not going to be a boxing match. Three falls to a finish.
Yeah.
Sad, but certainly no more pathetic than all the other
episodes. Well, I get it.
Sure.
I get it. Well, in this episode, we're going to be talking about midnight songs. You okay there?
I bumped my nose.
Going for the mouse, you bumped your nose.
I bumped my nose.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about songs that have midnight in the title. So I guess we're going to have to keep you up a little late. Typically, we do this around 11 o'clock in the morning.
I didn't
but
know that.
I guess we could have come in at midnight.
Well, we could have.
Could have, but we were watching the backs of our eyelids.
Old Lair doesn't make it till midnight very often anymore.
So anyway. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. We have some birthdays to get to. Happy birthday wishes to Barry Manilow, who turned 80 recently. Joe Piscopo, alive and well and still on the radio at 72.
He's on the radio.
He's on the radio in New York City.
What is he doing on the radio?
AM 970, The Answer.
What does he play, oldies? Or is it a talk show?
It's a talk show, but he also
plays in some songs.
Over on WABC.
Ah,
you've heard of them before.
AM.
Yes. He does a Sunday night show on Frank Sinatra.
Well, how about
week.
That?
I think it's like 6 to 8 p.m. on WABC on Sunday nights.
I guess he gets to do his impersonations.
Oh, he does. He does. He's a fantastic impersonator.
When he was on Saturday Night Live, that was great.
Real Saturday Night Live, and of course he does Frank Sinatra. He's even done his Frank Sinatra bit on SVU, Law and Order. Hmm. Paul McCartney turning 81.
Wow.
Yeah, Blake Shelton turning 47.
Oh,
recently.
I miss him on The Voice.
Blake Shelton.
I miss Blake Shelton on it. I love Blake Shelton.
Oh,
I think
he's a hoot.
He's the best.
He is.
And
he
he's
is.
Married to that sexy woman. Who's that sexy woman he's married to? It's not
Gwen Stefani.
It's not Twanaya Twain.
No, it's
Twain.
Not. No,
Twanaya Twanaya. Okay. What is it? Who is it?
Gwen Stefani.
Gwen Stefani.
Yeah. Okay. Paul Abdul turned 61 recently. Ann Wilson of Heart, 73. Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, 81. Lionel Richie turned 74 recently.
Well, here's something kind of fascinating. Talking about things turning what and this and that and the other. The vinyl LP turned 75 recently. On June 21, 1948, Columbia Records released the first long-playing micro-groove record, capable of holding 23 minutes of music per side. That was something. Columbia's president, Edward Wallerstein, announced the new technology at a news conference at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. According to label paperwork in the Library of Congress, the first vinyl disc featured... You want to know who?
Who?
Barry Manilow. No. Philharmonic.
At the Copa.
At the Copa, yeah. Philharmonic Symphony Orchestra of New York, later known as the New York Philharmonic, under the baton of Bruno Walter, performing Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto in E Minor with Nathan Milstein as the soloist.
Oh, that would have been my pick.
Yeah, me too. I think that's one that's not in my vinyl collection. Singer-actor Kris Kristofferson is 87, if you can believe it.
Wow.
And Cyndi Lauper is 70. I love that woman.
Mm-hmm. Former American Idol judge and also bassist for a while for the group Journey.
Never knew that.
Randy Jackson, 67. Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac, 76. Carly Simon, 78.
Say it ain't so.
Ariana Grande, 30.
You know, she's such a grande woman.
Well, she is, and she looks like she's only as big as a minute.
She comes from a long line of grandes. June 27th, comedian director Mel Brooks, one of our favorites, Spaceballs, Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein, Frankenstein. Robin Hood, Men in Tights, to mention a couple of the more lousier movies he ever made. But he made a lot of great ones, but you know, you can take that last
97?
One. Yeah.
Wow.
And it just picked up an award of some kind.
Yeah.
Well, it was a very light award. At the age of 97, he can't pick up anything heavy anymore.
I get that.
Who is this person?
Also, Nicole Scherzinger of Pussycat Dolls and one of the judges on The Masked Singer.
Oh, I love that show. When's it on?
That is great.
What night is that?
It's on Fox. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you which night.
I've never seen it before in my life.
No, it really is a funny show.
It's a good show?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
She's 45.
She is 45. Oh. Oh, and since we're doing this around the 4th of July, happy birthday to America. 247 years young.
And they said it wouldn't last.
That's right.
How about that? Hmm.
Hey, I got some music history makers.
We do?
Uh-huh. Back in 1967, it was 3 days, June 17th through the 19th, the Monterey Pop Festival.
Yeah. Doesn't seem possible.
Simon and Garfunkel performed, Eric Burdon, Johnny Rivers, Lou Rawls, The Association. That was all on Friday. Then on Saturday, Beach Boys, Otis Redding, Jefferson Airplane, The Byrds, Big Brother and Holding Company performed on Saturday. Then on Sunday, Grateful Dead, The Who, Jimi Hendrix, Ravi Shankar, Buffalo Springfield, and Mamas and Papas.
Are you sure you didn't have Woodstock in mind when you read that list? Sounds like
well, they called it the best in the West.
Oh, okay.
And I guess it would fall in that category.
Mm-hmm,
let's see, what else? Rolling Stones, their album Exile on Main Street, started a four-week run at number one on the U.S. charts in June of 1972. Fleetwood Mac came out with the song Dreams. Actually, that hit number one June 18th, 1977. One of my favorite albums, Joe Walsh, The Smoker You Drink, The Player You Get. Came out June 18th, 1973, Rocky Mountain Way.
Oh, I love this
song.
Was
on that album. And it was on this day, actually, June 22nd in 1882.
I don't remember it, but tell me, refresh my memory.
The air-conditioned rocking chair.
Oh, God.
Was patented.
You get the stuff. Air-conditioned rocking chair. What, I've never heard tell such thing.
It was true. I mean, don't think it caught on.
I don't think it caught on at all.
But the faster you rocked, the faster the fan turned.
That's the dumbest thing I think I've heard today.
Yeah, I get it.
Lots of people wandering the neighborhood this morning.
I noticed that. What was that all about?
Well, it's warm weather. You know, they come out in warm weather.
So they're not just out to see us?
No, okay. No, not any of them listening to us either, I can tell you that. Anyway.
I get it. Oh, I have one more history note, and it was kind of a sad note.
Oh.
Michael Jackson died on June 25th, 2009, at the age of 50.
Wow.
And of course, I think we all, that was one of those deaths where we all remember where we were when we heard it. So.
Yep.
All right, songs with midnight in the title.
Mm.
There really are a lot of songs.
I was surprised at the list. I really was.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
Obviously, some standouts. Midnight Train to Georgia, Gladys Knight, the Pips. And we've told that story before. It was a song written by Jim Weatherly, originally titled Midnight Plane to Houston.
Doesn't have the same feel, does it?
No, but... you know, if you didn't hear it before, Weatherly was friends with Lee Majors, Farrah Fawcett. The two were dating when Weatherly called Majors while in Los Angeles. Fawcett answered the phone. He asked what she was doing. She replied, taking a midnight plane to Houston.
Hmm.
Gospel and soul singer Sissy Houston wanted to record the song, asked Weatherly if she could change plane to train. He said yes. She recorded in 73. Guess what? It was not a hit. Gladys Knight and the Pips recorded it. It was released in 73, became the first number one hit for them in October of the year.
Sometimes it takes a song a couple of iterations before it gets around to becoming a hit. It just has to be that right combination of the music and the way it's put together in the studio. And once in a while, it just happens. After three or four tries, somebody else goes in and makes it.
And we've talked about the fact, what was it up against?
Yeah.
When it first came
out. That has a lot to do with it, too.
Yeah.
Melissa Manchester in 75 did Midnight Blue. What a big song that was.
Yeah.
And in 1970, the Allman Brothers' Midnight Rider.
Great song.
Yeah.
Great song.
Oh, you remember After Midnight? A lot of people did that. That was a great song, no matter who did it. J.J. Cale or Eric Clapton?
Yeah.
Or whoever,
yeah. And it was, what, it was actually J.J. Cale's song, which was first released in 66, but it was Clapton's cover in 1970 that made the song, I guess, what we remember today.
there again, he took it and twirled it around, made it his own, and next thing you know, we were twirling it around on radio.
Yeah.
Midnight on the Bay, Neil Young, Stephen Stills. I don't remember that.
No, I don't remember. I don't remember. Obviously, it's a deep cut.
Somewhere. I'd ask you to hum some of it, but I'm
thank you. I wouldn't get in trouble. Know where to start.
In the Midnight Hour, Wilson Pickett, one of the great midnight songs of all time.
Yeah.
Look, we now have a dog, a pretty pathetic-looking dog wandering through.
Gosh, that's a mama.
She looks like
mama
she,
dog.
She has seen her better days.
You don't think you have puppies out back here?
Oh, my heavens, I hope not. Midnight Rambler, Rolling Stone in 1969. Mm-hmm. We see more stuff out this back window here in the studio, I swear.
Nothing out front.
There's nothing out front. It's all back here. Soon After Midnight by Bob Dylan, I do not recall.
Remember the song Midnight Flyer the Eagles?
Mm-hmm,
1974 was a cut off the Eagles' second album, On the Border. Bernie Ledden played banjo, Glenn Frey, slide guitar, Randy Meisner did the lead vocals. And that was the singles from that album, of course, Already Gone, Best of My Love, however, you can't pass up Midnight Flyer. And James Dean and Old 55 were on that.
Hmm.
That was one of their best albums.
Here's another great one, Midnight Special. CCR, Creedence Clearwater Revival, 1969 song.
Yep. But there was also the version by Johnny Rivers.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I don't know if you remember or if you stayed up long enough to watch it, but remember the show, Midnight Special?
Oh, yeah.
Bert Sugarman has just recently put all of those shows on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That would be fun. Now, didn't Wolfman Jack, wasn't he host for a while?
No, I think
Wolfman Jack.
And a lot of people who performed on the show at the time, you know, they were used to lip syncing on these shows, but they were doing it live, and Bert Sugarman brought in some of the best sound people.
He insisted on them all be live.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the artists were just blown away by the way their sound came across on television.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to check out some of the clips that you can still, well, the whole show, Midnight Special TV show, just search for that on YouTube. You can find the full episodes. Patsy Cline. You're a big Patsy Cline fan, aren't you?
I'm a huge Patsy Cline fan. I've been to her. I've been to her place of wake for many, many times. I have shown people where she's buried down there in Winchester, Virginia, up on the hill there. And I won't tell you the story.
Oh, yes, he will one day.
One day I'll tell the story. Well, if it happened to me and my aunts, how bad could it be? And the answer is pretty darn bad. Midnight Tango, Steve Miller. I don't remember that.
Another deep cut. Has to be.
Fire at Midnight. I do, because I was Jethro Tull fan, and I did listen to the deep cuts.
Now, that one I don't remember.
That one, just place the needle gently down on the vinyl.
Okay. Was that on Aqualung?
What's that? Yeah, I think it might have been.
Okay.
Yeah. Midnight Sky, Isley Brothers, don't remember that.
No.
Midnight, Jimi Hendrix, don't remember that. Who made this list? Midnight Cowboy, we all remember, because Harry Nilsson made that. He wrote it.
Everybody's talking, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Working the Midnight Shift, Donna Summer, do not remember that.
No.
Midnight Confessions, Grassroots, definitely remember that. Great song from 1968.
Midnight Blue, ELO, 79, great song. Midnight Hour, Rascals did it in 66. South City Midnight Lady, Doobie Brothers, somebody throws a Bart Prater favorite song.
Oh, man, he loved that one. Yeah. Really loved that song. Journey's Midnight Dreamer, B.B. King's Blues at Midnight. Did we ever mention that song from Maria Muldaur?
Oh, no, you know what? We didn't.
She was one of your favorite interviews, right?
Believe it or not, I interviewed her at WVTF Public Radio, and she came in on a Friday evening and
parked her camel out front.
She parked her camel out front, that's right. And she sat down with me at WVTF when I was doing the Big Bad Swing show.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about all sorts of stuff. She's a wonderful lady. You know, she, of course, came on the music scene in New York. She later found herself going from that genre of music to New Orleans and doing blues and what have you. But anyway, she talks about this particular song, which she had never had a hit record. And she's never had one since, by the way. But anyway.
This was a whole new adventure for me, but... I thought this young guitar player had been so supportive and encouraging to me that as a gesture to him, I told the producer, well, this guy, David Nickturn, has a nice sort of medium tempo song. And I said, why don't you play him that Midnight at the Oasis song? And he whipped out his guitar and played it for the producer. And the producer said, yeah, that's kind of cute. He wasn't wild about it or anything, but he thought, well, that'll kind of round out the album. So we threw that on there, and God rewarded me for that little gesture toward my guitar player, because for some reason, everybody found it just an irresistible song.
They sure did.
It's still a fun song to listen to, and I know I was listening to the audiobook from Linda Ronstadt, Simple Dreams. Mm-hmm. She's a big fan of Maria Muldaur.
Really?
Yeah. Loves her stuff.
And isn't that funny? They were trying to find one more cut for an album. Mm-hmm. That has happened so many times in the music business. Now we have to have one more cut. What do we got here? Well, I got this crummy old thing I've been sitting on for 2 years. Let's give it a try. The next thing you know, it's the big hit. It's amazing how music
And
works.
I listened to the album as I was listening to the Linda Ronstadt audiobook. And because I could not remember the album. Of course, I knew the song, Midnight at the Oasis. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's the song that stands out on the whole album.
And that's something.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great album.
It is.
But that's the song that stands out.
Okay, Lair. Uh-oh. It's time for news from around the world, around the corner and up your alley.
Wait a minute, I got to change the ribbon on the teletype machine.
The Punk Rock Museum has just opened in Las Vegas, dedicated to all things punk. And they're not concerned in the slightest if you don't care. Fat Mike Burkett is one of the great punkers of all time, apparently. Who knew? He said in Detroit, he was with a punk band, he said in Detroit, Michigan, people would show up to our show, which was $1 to get in, Burkett explains. All four of them left before the first song was over. The sound man's like,
wait a minute, how many? All four?
Four people. He says, there's no one here. Can you just stop playing? We're like, clearly we need to practice. So we went on ahead and finished the song. He says that word a couple of times, magic, as he walks through the new Punk Rock Music Hall of Fame Museum in Las Vegas, a two-story, 12,000-square-foot wonderland of combat boots, drum kits, show flyers, chainsaws, and more flyers and stuff. It's widely considered by those who would know to be the world's most comprehensive collection of all things punk. Officially, the museum took 2 years and 4 months to get in from concept to completion. Not that it'll ever be fully complete. The idea here is the collection will continually evolve. Of course, we hope so. We're a satellite of a music industry, Burkett explains. There's no Grammy for punk rock, even though the biggest rock bands in the world are Green Day and Blink 182. They're punk bands. There's no chart and billboard for punk. And that's how we like it, because we're not a part of the music industry. Boy, did he ever say something right there. He says, we're not respected and we don't want respect. Well, okay, then I'll be staying away from your doggone museum there, Burkett. We want a place. We want a place where any punk rocker from around the world can come and feel like they're a part of something special. Also in the news, Cracker Barrel restaurants in the news.
Oh.
Why would that be? And it doesn't concern food contamination or anything. Seems that a lot of TikTokers, have you ever done the TikTok?
No, I have not.
No, I haven't either. I'm too old for that. Have taken, well, that was almost, an, TikTok takers, TikTok have taken almost an alliteration to doing something kind of, well, I think is hysterical.
Oh.
I think it's funny.
Okay.
But not to the folks at Cracker Barrel.
Uh-oh. Right?
People are, what they're doing is they're faking old-timey photos of themselves, which
you can
go to places. They put, like I went to Dollywood, and we, Mike Blankenship and I said, let's go in here. It's cool. We'll get our picture taken. So they had all these costumes.
Sure.
All these costumes, some country western costumes. I put a big old hat on, you know, had a nice leather coat and all that, and we were greasy. I mean, we looked awful. We've been out. It was 98 degrees in the shade. And they took some pictures of us in black and white, and I'll swear you would think that we really had just come out of the Old West. So anyway, people are faking old-timey photos of themselves in black and white and dated attire, and then they're putting them in frames, and then they're taking them along to Cracker Barrel when they eat there. And while no one is looking, they place the fake antique photos on the fireplace mantle and leave them. You know, because you got all those old pictures hanging around. I certainly don't recommend this, but I have to admit there's a little harm done. And in fact, I think it's right darn clever, if you want to know.
That is kind of cute.
So next time you go, and you might want to look around.
Yeah, and look a little closer at those photos.
Oh, look, Blue Cats are getting a real treatment here today. Look at that.
Yeah.
My renter in the back is sitting down there just rubbing it. You better be careful. He smacked at me early this morning. He'll put the wound on you. I'll tell you that right now.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, it's time, Larry, for a pop quiz. Sound effects guy's a little off today. I don't know what's going on. Where did the musical group Uriah Heep get their name?
I'm afraid to ask.
The progressive rock band searched around for a while and finally found a name they liked, Uriah Heep, a rather devious character who appears in the 1850s Charles Dickens classic novel, David Copperfield. Yeah. The real David Copperfield, by the way, the magician and the illusionist of note, may or may not have borrowed his stage name from Dickens, we're not sure, as his real name is David Seth Kotkin from New Jersey. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yep. So anyway, that's where Uriah Heep stole it from Charles Dickens' classic novel, David Copperfield. It was a character.
I don't believe I ever knew that.
Well, you can't say that anymore.
Yeah.
It's air quality, I'm telling you. It's really starting to get to me big time.
It's got to improve. It's time for a few obits.
Bluegrass musician Bobby Osborne, who helped popularize the song Rocky Top, has died. He was 91 years old.
Wow.
The Osborne and his brother Sonny made up the Osborne Brothers, not to be confused with the Brothers Osborne, which is a new group that's hot right now. Their version of the song Rocky Top in 1967 became an official state song of Tennessee. Osborne was a member of the Grand Ole Opry and the International Bluegrass Hall of Fame, Music Hall of Fame. And I, strangely enough, loved the Osborne Brothers. You know, I grew up on a farm with a bunch of cattle and pigs. And so I got to listen to a goodly amount of country music and bluegrass, whether I wanted to or not, when I was growing up. But I found myself, for some strange reason, I just loved the sound of the Osborne Brothers. Yeah. And I actually have several, not one, several of their Osborne Brothers albums in my vinyl collection.
Oh, really?
To this day. And if I'd have known it, I'd have brought them down because, you know, we do have a record player here in the studio.
Yeah,
we've got virtually every old antique thing you could possibly want. I thought it'd be fun to listen to something from radio from about 50 years back, I guess, something like that.
Oh.
Before he was a local weather guy on WRC-TV NBC in Washington, D.C., Willard Scott was one half of the radio team Walker and Scott. Ed Walker on WRC-AM-FM and later WWDC-AM-FM, from which this bit of audio was captured by me one afternoon a long time ago. I had a cassette machine, and we had a fine FM radio you could plug right into, so it's taken directly off the air. Walker and Scott got the station in a bit of trouble, by the way.
Oh.
With the FCC.
Uh-oh.
Because the station got fined by the feds for exceeding the number of minutes in each hour that can be dedicated to running advertising spots, as it were. And this happened because advertisers paid extra money to have their spots read live by Willard and Ed.
Okay.
Because they had so much fun with it.
Right.
Who, as you will hear, often went off on funny tangents and did bits and jokes, expanding a 30-second spot often to 1 or 2 minutes. Here we go.
All right. The time at WWDC right now, 21 after 3. And if you have ideas about, I guess, is this a secretarial school one we're doing?
Today we're promoting, today we're promoting the interesting words of a secretarial career.
They're lost like us.
Are you looking for a better job, more interesting work, higher pay?
Definitely.
Want to work with a bunch of disc jockeys?
No.
Did you ever see that ad? Somebody ran a want ad, help wanted ad. Said, looking for a girl between, 19 and 23 years of age. Girl must like to be chased around the office, must like to be propositioned at least 24 hours a day, must like you know, fast guys. It was called a radio station for a job at the music library or something.
That's like the one about...
They said the switchboard lit up.
Old man, lives alone, practical nurse desired, impractical nurse even more desired.
Preferred, yeah.
You see what I'm talking about? They would just go off on a tangent and just have a good time with it. So.
And I get that. Do you remember what the ad was?
No. See, it was supposed to be. I don't think they ever got to it, Larry. It was supposed to be a secretarial school. That's what it was supposed to be, but I don't think they ever got to it. Maybe they did. I only took part of the clip.
Classic radio.
I thought it was fun.
I thought we would try a new feature here on the podcast, something called Beyond the Tracks.
Beyond the Tracks.
And that's where we're going to feature an artist or a group with five things you may or may not have known. And I thought, why not start with Paul Simon? So he is our featured artist and the five things you may or may not know about him. Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel met each other in 1953 while doing a sixth grade production of Alice in Wonderland.
Get out of here.
Paul was the White Rabbit, Art the Cheshire Cat.
He always reminded me of a Cheshire
Cat.
Yeah,
I could see that. Their first single was Hey Schoolgirl by Tom and Jerry.
Original
in 1957.
Name.
Yeah, really.
What are we going to call ourselves? Well, let's see. Oh, there's a cartoon. Let's call ourselves Tom and Jerry.
Well, the song only made it to number 49 of the Hot 100, but snagged them an appearance on American Bandstand.
Really?
They became known as Simon and Garfunkel in the 60s. I guess back in 1957, Tom and Jerry was a lot easier to spell than Garfunkel.
I suppose.
I don't know.
Paul wrote the 1970 hit Bridge Over Troubled Waters, which, of course, at HBG in Harrisonburg, we always called Trouble Over in Bridgewater. During the summer of 1969, the song was inspired by the gospel quartet The Swan Silvertones, whom I never heard of.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have a little thing here from Fred Freelance. You want to run right now?
Yeah, let's do that.
Interviewing Paul.
Paul Simon on guitar. And the song Feeling Groovy, where did the unusual title come from?
I was coming home one morning about 6 o'clock, and I was coming over the 59th Street Bridge in New York. And it was really a gas of a day, you know, one of these very groovy type of dawns. And I was in a very good mood, and I started writing the song. And I said, well, I'll call this my 59th Street Bridge song. And then later on, it became apparent that the real title was Feeling Groovy, but I stuck to the other title.
Wow, you can tell what a young Paul Simon he was.
He really was. To this day, I cannot figure out where Fred Freelance did that interview. I can't imagine it was at ROV, but it might have been, because a lot of people came through.
Yeah, you never know.
No, you never did.
Yeah. Paul Simon married three times, Peggy Harper in 69. He lived with Shelley Duvall for a couple of years before she introduced him to her friend, who became his second wife, Carrie Fisher. They were married from 83 to 84.
I had forgotten about that one.
Yeah. He proposed to Carrie at a Yankees game, and apparently they
were
friends.
As a matter of fact, I did.
Several years after.
I did, too. I proposed to Carrie Fisher at a Yankees game. Yeah, I did.
And today he's married, living in Texas, married to Edie Brickell. Of Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians.
Never heard of that.
Great. What I Am.
Are they country?
No.
Oh, well,
no.
What I Am. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. They were married in May of 92, and they have three children.
Kind of a sad thing, which you probably now know because we all watch the same show.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost his hearing in his left ear.
Yeah,
only 9%. Yeah, only 9% hearing. So he's having some difficulties with that. Makes playing with other musicians very difficult.
And if you haven't listened to his new song, is it considered a song or an album? Seven Psalms.
Yeah.
But it's like a 33-minute cut.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Mm.
Check that out. So anyway, that's Paul Simon. He is our first feature in Beyond the Tracks. I believe that's it for this podcast.
No, that's it. I got it.
All right.
Smoke on the Water. That's something we should have featured today. Smoke everywhere.
It is everywhere.
Did you know that yesterday was the first time, I think I'm right about this,
mm-hmm.
That we ever had a code red in Roanoke.
Not surprised considering the way considering the way it looked.
It was so bad yesterday.
How bad was it, Larry?
That the two co-anchors on Channel 7, that would be
Natalie Fawcett, Gene Chadha,
couldn't even see each other, and they were literally sitting beside each other at the desk. That's how difficult it was. They kept having to yell at each other.
In fact, it was so bad. As you were doing that, Mayor Lee couldn't even find Mill Mountain.
Or a microphone, for that matter. You know you're in bad shape when Mayor Lee can't find a microphone.
I'm going to stop while we're ahead. Hey, thank you so much for listening to episode 67 of Two Larrys and a Mike. If you like this podcast, hit the subscribe button so you'll be notified of the new episodes. And you can find Two Larrys and a Mike wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to share this podcast with someone. Click on the share button. And we will see you next time for Two Larrys and a Mike. I'm Larry Doughty.
Larry Bly here.
And Mike is still?
He's still getting in shape for that big Punch and Judy show. He's got the punch part down real good. What is he going to do about Judy? We're not quite sure.